This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to the February 22nd, 2021 For Your Benefit radio show. We're here today with Mark Levine. Mark is an attorney at law, a good guy. We've known each other for a significant period of time, Esquire with the firm Handler and Levine. And we're going to talk about powers of attorney, healthcare directives, revocable trusts, and I'll come up with some questions on occasion. It'd be very simple. Good morning.
Morning, Bob. How are you?
Well, very good. Now, it's been a while since you and I have done this.
I think that's right. I think that's right. I don't know what's going on in the world, but that's good to be back.
Yeah, well, this will be fun. Folks, you're in for close to an hour of riveting information. But I love the title, Morbid Improbabilities, Planning for the Unexpected Lifetime Issues. Did you do that? Did you write that?
I wrote that. That comes from a client years ago who we were talking, and I kept asking him, well, what about this and what about that? And he kept saying, well, that's not going to happen. I said, yeah, but we have to look at the things that aren't likely. And he just looked at me and said, you just spend your whole life dealing with morbid improbabilities, don't you? And ever since then, that's one of my favorite phrases. And as I said, I think I'm going to name it. If I ever write a book, that's going to be the name of the book, Morbid Improbabilities, My Life in Estate Planning.
That's right. And it sounds harsh, but you have a delivery that's anything but harsh. You explain the unexplainable, the morbid improbabilities. And I think people listen and take more away from that. So spotlight on you now.
Well, you know, it's interesting because a lot of times when you start having conversations with people about estate planning, they have an idea of what they think the issues are. And very often it's sort of, well, I just have to make sure this, and this happens. And, you know, this is the path and this is what will happen. So it's very simple. And, you know, most of the time, that's how stuff works out. Most of the time, things happen in estate planning the way that we think they're going to happen. People die in the right order. People are incapacitated in the right order. The right people step up and they're able to take over for mom and dad, for example, as mom and dad get older. And most of the time, that's what works out. The problem is, obviously, we can't anticipate which are the cases where it's going to work out just fine and which are the cases where things are all going to go sideways. That's really the art of estate planning, is dealing with the improbable. And obviously, because it's estate planning, it's the morbid issues. It's the things that can go really wrong, the things that are sort of deadly that we're dealing with. A lot of people ask me about online programs and canned programs and things like that. And I think that's one of the main differences between what an attorney does and what these sort of much more mass-produced things do, which is they're planning for the probable. They're taking the information you give in, and they're saying, okay, well, based on that, here's what's probably going to happen. And they seldom push back. They seldom say, well, but what about this, or what about this, or what about this? And so they don't deal with the improbable. And as I said, most of the time that works out fine. And most people assume they're going to be the top. Well, I'll say this. Most people assume they're going to be the people who it all works out fine for. I have some people who are just as positive that they're the ones where it's all going to go sideways, that they're the case where things aren't going to happen the way that they want. So really, when we're you know, from the very beginning of the estate planning process, we're thinking about these morbid improbabilities. You know, we have a questionnaire that we send out to clients. And inevitably, not inevitably, but often clients will say, well, that's a lot of information. You don't need all that information. And, you know, again, most of the time, they're right. Most of the time, we don't need that information. But that's the information. Those are the things that lead to the questions that lead us to say, what about this or what about that? And so that's the beginning of the process, is sort of figuring out what are your issues? What are your concerns? and what aren't you telling me about your concerns? One of the things about moving during COVID to non-live meetings is people say, well, we could talk on the phone. I still prefer Zoom or something like that, because I can see when one of the couple, when the wife says, oh, you know, our kids will be fine with the money, and you can see the husband's eyebrows rise up, and he's not as convinced the kids are going to be okay, or that they're going to get along as well, or that your sort of aspirational ideas of what will happen. And that can lead me to ask questions about how they get along, or what's going on, or what are the issues that, even if they're not telling me, they know about or they've thought about. And that plays out through sort of all the documents we're talking about here today, powers of attorney and healthcare directives and revocable trusts. Really, I picked those because those are the things that are going to affect you while you're alive. You know, your will, very important document, very important to have, but it's not going to affect you. It's going to affect what happens after you. And while that's really important, and we spend a lot of time dealing with it, one of the things that we've learned over the course of the last year is, you know, there's a lot of stuff that happens before that ever happens. And so we're really looking at how do we use these things to make things work well for you and your family while it affects you. And so that's really more what we're going to be focused on, I think, this morning, is that stuff, not who gets it when you're gone, but how do they use it now to take care of you, and what's likely to get in the way of that.
So, Mark, if I came in and I didn't know you, but I heard that you walk on water legally, and what's an icebreaker that you're going to ask me because I'm too nervous to say something and I'm here for you to teach me how to dance?
You know, the first thing I start with usually is, what is in the front of your mind? What are you most worried about? What brought you here? What is the thing that you're thinking about while I might be asking you other questions? Because I always want to get that out of the way. What's the thing that's on your mind? And sometimes it's nothing. Sometimes there are people who are like, yeah, no, we just know we need to do this. It's the responsible thing. You guide us, and then we'll go through more of a normal process. But very often it's sort of that one kid that they're worried about, or it's the how are people practically going to be able to do something if I'm incapacitated or right after my death or something like that. So, you know, we try and figure out from them first, what's on your mind? What are you thinking about? If we have the questionnaire, then we're sort of going to go and I'm going to start asking questions. You know, you didn't list that you had any life insurance. Oh, I have this $150,000 policy or this $50,000 policy. It's not a big deal. I said, well, great. You're going to leave it to me? Is it like that little of a deal to you that you don't care about? No, of course not. So it's sort of going through and also setting a tone for, you know, just because you think it's not important doesn't mean it's not important, or doesn't mean we don't have to deal with it. And so we start talking about the assets because those are sort of neutral. And then we start talking about the family. And the family is where, you know, things can get interesting. Sometimes, again, most of the time, my kids are great. They get along fine. You know, some of them are best friends. Sometimes they're not. But they're all going to work together. I don't have any doubt. And sort of both parents are the same with that. But as you start asking questions about, okay, well, this is what they'll have to do, or that's what they'll have to do, they'll be like, oh, well, that's fine. But oh my God, my daughter-in-law can't be involved in this because she's a pain and my son hates her. And my other son hates his sister-in-law. And you start getting into those sort of interpersonal things that are going to get in the way of getting things done down the line. And that's really what we're digging for, is what are the things that are going to get in the way of the plan? Whether they're expected, like we know these kids don't get along, or they're unexpected. Like, you know, there's a, you know, they think that the son who lives in Zurich is the one who's going to be able to do all this stuff here for them. But practically, how's that going to work? You know, the competent kid is also the kid for whom this is going to be the hardest. So how is that actually going to work when you're dealing with this day after day after day for somebody?
And if the kids are there, not the children, but let's say they're 18 and above, in the first meeting, do you like them there or after maybe there's been a roadmap drawn?
I never want the kids there at the beginning unless it's really necessary. Because I always want the parents to be able to speak their mind about their kids. I also don't want the kids always have an opinion. You know, the kids' opinion is, you know, they should get the money outright and they should get it immediately and they should have all the control. And maybe that's true, but, you know, you want to hear from the parent ahead of time. What I urge parents to do is think about what they want their plan to be before you ask the kids, before you talk to the kids about it. Don't just open it up for a general discussion because their image of themselves is not always your image of them, and their image of themselves is not always the reality, and your image of them is not always the reality. But you need to think through what you want to happen and what works for you and your spouse first before you go to them. As time goes on, and this is one of the things we'll start talking about, is the kids start to have more involvement. You know, the kids are the ones doing things for mom and dad. And so you do have to have much more contact with them and they're much more involved in the process, but it's not generally where we want to start unless, you know, mom or dad are you know, pretty far along. So, you know, what I say in the classes when we're talking to people on the seminars is, you know, the most important document really for your lifetime is your power of attorney, is having a document that lets people make decisions for you if you can't make them for yourself. There's a plan for what happens to you if you don't have a power of attorney and you become incapacitated. And that plan is court. That plan is a judge deciding who's going to be in charge of you. That may be a family member, but it may not be a family member. You know, it's usually a family member for sort of personal things, who your doctor is, where you live, what kind of medicine, what kind of therapy. For the property, for your stuff, you know, even if there's only one kid, if they had a bankruptcy, they may not be able to get bonded. They may not be able to be the guardian. If there are two kids, they may be fighting over it. If there's a new spouse and kids from the old spouse, they may be fighting over who's in charge. And a judge may ultimately decide that there's going to be another person in charge. And that power of attorney is you saying, here's who I want to be in charge. Here are the tools I'm going to give them. Here's how they have to relate to each other. You get to set your own standard for how things are going to go. And I think that digging into some of that's really important because what we want is that to be as smooth as possible. We want your kids to be able to walk up to the financial advisor or the banker or the title company or the credit card company or IRS with this power of attorney and be able to do all the things that you could do with the appropriate checks and balances and transparency and things like that.
So there are different types of powers of attorney?
So there are different types of powers of attorney. I think the most important type, the type that we're mostly dealing with, is some kind of general power of attorney. And when I say general power of attorney, powers of attorney are never truly general. You can't really do a power of attorney that says, anything I can do, my wife can do. Anything I can do, my husband can do. Powers of attorney are always a series of specific grants of power. I give power over my bank accounts, my brokerage accounts, my credit union accounts, my house, my credit cards, my digital assets, my retirement benefits. And we sort of throw all of these sort of specific powers together to make a general power of attorney. So within the idea of general powers of attorney, there are statutory powers of attorney. So some states have come along and said, hey, here's a form that you can use for a power of attorney, and then sort of a more customized power of attorney. So what we might do for clients outside of the statutory power, because the statutory power in some places has limitations, things you can do, things you can't do, things like that. I think one of the most important things is making sure power of attorney does enough things, has enough powers. You know, practically speaking, what do you need to do if you're a kid who suddenly has to take care of mom or dad? You have to access their bank accounts, get on their checking account. You've got to be able to access their taxes, their credit card statements, their, you know, sort of all the different things that you do. Think about what you do every day simply because you're you. And now you have to think, okay, if my kid has to do them, how are they going to do that? And it's always easier if it's referenced directly. Do I think that a statutory general power of attorney will work to access your credit cards? Yes. Is it better if we have a paragraph that says, hey, you're allowed to access my credit cards. You're allowed to deal with MBA. You're allowed to deal with this. The more specific it is in there, the easier it's going to be in different situations.
So how do people react like that? Do they, why do I have to have one for each one of this, or why is it general better than?
Well, I think people react, they sometimes think it's overkill, you know, and they'll go through there sometimes and they'll be like, well, I don't need this and I don't need that. And sometimes they're right. You know, there's a power to operate a business, right? So if you don't have a business, we don't really need that power in the document. On the other hand, there's a power to deal with a safe deposit box. Well, lots of people don't have safe deposit boxes, but it doesn't hurt to have it in there. What if you get one? What if you want one later? Do you really want to pay me to deal with it? I think that, you know, having that sort of laundry list of powers, thinking about who are you responsible for, who are you likely to become responsible for in the future. So if you have people that rely on you financially, you may very well be in a situation where, you know, you have to make sure your agent, your kids can use that power. So if you provide support to one adult kid because they can't really handle, haven't fully launched into the world, and you're giving your other kid power over your stuff, you've got to give them guidance and ability on how to use that.
And Andrew says it's time to take a break because people are taking good notes and we need them to put them in proper order. But more importantly, the sponsor of the show, WEPA, is the first spot.
Life doesn't always go as planned. WEPA provides group term life insurance for over 46,000 civilian federal employees and has been insuring the future of feds for more than 75 years. With WEPA, you can find coverage that meets your changing needs and adjust whenever you're ready. Apply for your policy today by visiting waepa.org. WEPA.org.
Life insurance on your terms. Group term life insurance is a smart option if you're looking for coverage that'll help meet your changing needs. At WEPA, feds can apply for up to $1.5 million in coverage regardless of salary. WEPA offers life insurance protection for feds by feds. Apply by visiting waepa.org today.
Welcome back to the February 22nd, 2021 For Your Benefit radio show with Mark Levine. Mark is, and he picked this title, The Morbid Improbabilities. I think it's a great title because that's what I think we all do, but especially what Mark does. So we talked an awful lot about power of attorneys. Got some more to do, fine, but after that, what's next?
Well, so first of all, I love, you know, how the spot started. Life doesn't always go as planned. That's exactly what we're talking about here. A little bit more about powers of attorney. We talked about making sure the powers are there. I think the who do you pick can be is a really important thing as well. I think that picking people who are capable of doing the job you give them, thinking about skill sets, thinking about you know, who is it that's actually going to be able to pick up your life, pay your mortgage, pay your bills, deal with your financial advisor, while they also deal with their own life. And so thinking about, you know, who's the adult kid, if you're thinking about a kid, who's the family member, who's the person you trust with common sense, who can do this. And I think that a lot of problems come when people sort of assume that it's going to be their oldest child or assume that it's going to be a particular person, or are locked into it being a spouse who may not be capable of doing it. That's something that, again, as people get older, especially, you really have to think about, can my spouse do this if I can't? Can I even do it right now if I can't? And so I think it's really important to think about who are we picking, making sure, again, it's that person you trust with common sense who's gonna manage people. And then if you're sort of set on it being both of your kids, for example, how will they interact? Are they joint? That means they have to do everything together. Are they joint in several? That means they can each do anything. Is either of those practical? If we say they have to do everything together, how practical is that to getting stuff done for you? And if they don't get along now, they're not going to get along later under stress. Our kids are who we think they are. They're not better versions of themselves under stressful situations. And so you really have to think about what makes sense in these situations when we're picking people. And I think the other big thing is deciding when it's going to be able to be used. The sort of classic power of attorney is what we call springing. It says when I become incapacitated, then my spouse or then my kids can take over. And one of the things we've seen for sure in COVID is that can create some real problems. Unavailability is not the same as incapacity. Simply being unavailable does not activate a springing power of attorney. And so if you're cut off from people, if you're in the hospital, if people can't get to you or you can't get out to do things, no doctor is going to say you're incapacitated. You're not. But we still need to be able to do things. And so one of the things that we've really looked at and we sort of question clients much more closely about is how comfortable are you with an immediate power so that it says, hey, as soon as I sign this document, my son or my spouse or my nephew is my power of attorney. And if we don't want that, then to use a springing power of attorney that has what I'll call sort of the big red button. It's got a provision that says that you can activate the power of attorney. Doesn't require two doctors. You're the one who can say, hey, this used to be based on incapacity, but now I'm going to make it immediate. And the idea is, you know, to make sure that when it's needed, it can be used. We sometimes will flip the capacity switch. Occasionally, someone who knows that they're sort of losing capacity, they'll say, well, I'm going to be the, you know, this power of attorney is not effective as long as every 6 months the doctor says I am competent. And if the doctor ever doesn't say that, then it's immediate. So it's sort of, we can go through your concerns, but it's really important to think about when might this be used? How easy will it to be used? Will it be to use it and by who? And sort of thinking practically about who are the people who are going to do it? When might they need it? How will they effectuate it? Things like that. Thinking sort of very practically about what actually happens.
So all children are not created equal. So if you have a situation where there's two or more, and there's one that is particularly a superstar and one that is anything but that, how do you get the language put on a piece of paper so that one isn't alienated from the other? Or they might never know it.
Sure. I think that it's really important to think about that. So you've got these two kids with, you know, and let's assume the best for both of them. They just have two different skill sets. You know, one of them is an artist who doesn't keep their own checkbook balanced, intends to do things, but never quite gets them done. And the other is, you know, an engineer. Everything gets done a month before it needs to get done. It's all put away and exactly right. And if you tried to put those two people together, they would drive each other crazy. They might get along fine right now because they only have to interact as siblings, not as business partners in a way. So if we're going to make the kid who has the skill set for this the agent, how do we do it in a way that is going to preserve as much of their relationship as possible? So one of the things we look at is transparency. If Nancy is going to be the power of attorney, how do we set things up so that, you know, her sibling doesn't feel marginalized? Well, one thing is transparency. Nancy's the power of attorney. She makes all the decisions, but everyone gets copies of the bank statements and everyone gets copies of the brokerage statements. So everybody knows on a monthly basis, at least, how much money there is, what was spent, what's left, what was stuff spent on, so that nothing is happening that they don't already know about. I think this is better than assuming that, you know, the agent's going to have time every week to bring everyone up to date. Those kinds of communications can create friction. There's often an awful lot of baggage between family members, between siblings. And so having the sort of passive distribution of information can really reduce that friction. So I think that's really important. We have that in there a lot. The other thing we'll look at are checks and balances. So we have this power of attorney. The power of attorney is immediate. There's an awful lot of power in there. We do not want the power of attorney to call their siblings every month and say, hey, can I pay the mortgage? Can I file the taxes? Can I buy dad a new coat? You know, those are things we want them to be able to do as efficiently as possible. They're efficient. They're going to get the job done. But there are big powers as well, because there have to be. There are powers perhaps to make a gift, to change a trust, to change a beneficiary designation. Those are things that we may want the agent to have to go back to their brother and sister and say, look, I've talked to the financial advisor. I've talked to the attorney. I've talked to the accountant. They think we should make these changes for this reason or this reason or this reason. So perhaps mom and dad have to qualify for Medicaid down the road and we need to make gifts. Or there's money going to kids, to grandkids from the IRA, and the Secure Act just changed how all of that works. And so there are things that may have to get changed, but those are big things. Those are things that theoretically the agent could use to better themselves in response or, you know, to the everyone else. And so having transparency, having checks and balances can mean that everybody knows what's going on and everybody knows nothing big is going to change without them being involved. You need to know your family. Sometimes it's going to create more problems than it solves. But those are things to think about when you're constructing your power of attorney or your trust.
Something closely aligned to a power of an attorney, at least in my eyes, would be health care directives. I mean, they're not the same, but why do I need that if I can cover it with a power of attorney?
Well, they're two different documents. They deal with two different sets of issues. Your bank doesn't need to know your end of life decisions, and your doctor doesn't care about who can access your bank account. It also may be two different people. You know, again, we've really stressed talking about skill sets. What's someone good at? What is it that they're going to be able to handle for you? And quite frankly, these can often be two different skill sets. The person who's good at dealing with your healthcare may not be the person who's good at paying your bills, and vice versa. You know, this healthcare person is really not just, people think of it as who's going to pull the plug on me. So they sort of immediately say, well, all my kids, that's a decision they should all make together. And they kind of assume they can, and we'll talk about that. But really, this person is your healthcare advocate. They are the person who's going to decide where you live, who your doctor is, what kind of therapy, what kind of surgery, what kind of medication you're going to be on. They're the ones who have to ask for second and third and fourth opinions if necessary. They're the ones who have to fight with the healthcare provider to make sure you're getting the kind of care you need, the kind of care you're entitled to. They really have to be your healthcare advocate. And that's slightly different. You know, when we talk about it with clients and we say, well, you know, who's going to be your agent? They really focus on that decision, that last decision. And I'm much more focused on, you know, the years before that. How are we going to help your kids have the ability to deal with these things? How are we going to help them have the information to deal with it? And so, you know, again, that sort of springing versus immediate, we kind of always want the agent to be able to get information, to know how you're doing, to know who your doctor is at any given time. And so that involves some kind of HIPAA authorization. Maybe you've got a bunch of the kids who are taking you to different doctor's appointments. Well, you may want a HIPAA authorization that says, look, all of the kids can get information. All of the kids can talk to doctors. But when there's a decision to be made, if I can't make it, it's going to be Mary. Mary's the person who's going to make the decisions, even though everyone gets information and knows what's going on. And if you're going to have more than one healthcare agent, you need to think about, again, how do they make decisions? Is it joint? Is it either or? Not all doctors and hospitals will be comfortable with either or. Sometimes if there are two people listed, they're going to want both people to opine on something. And then again, are they willing to do the thing you want? You know, when we get down to that worst case scenario or you know, the sort of end of the line, are they able to do the thing that you want them to do? Are they able to pull the plug? That's not a bad thing to say about your kid, that they're not able to pull the plug on you. That's really nice. They can't imagine the world without you in it. That's lovely. But if that's what you would want them to do, you really need to make sure that they can do it. And if they can't, naming them as the agent to make that decision, it's not only going to create problems for you because you're not going to get what you want, but it's going to create problems with the other kids who are willing to do what you want.
Wow. I had that situation with my dad. He was in a hospital, and he was not going to come out of the hospital. And the doc came out. He said, we need to pull the plug. And my mom said, no, da-da-da-da-da. And then I came in and tried to be a mediator. So we allowed another, I believe it was a week. And I knew he wasn't, you know, I knew. And it worked out fine. And finally, instead of the doctor talking Dr. Ease and my mother talking religion, I got in the middle of them and I said, Mom, he's saying there is no time. And I looked at the doc and I said, can we have a few days or a week? And that broke the ice and we were able to get going. Not that I'm the great mediator, but they weren't talking to each other.
Right. Yeah, I think not only that, but I mean, I think that having these documents and saying, so in other words, your father at some point might have decided that you were a better person to be making those choices, that your mother wouldn't do what he wanted or, you know, as she got older, maybe couldn't do what he wanted and might have switched to you because you were capable of doing it and capable of doing what he wanted. And thinking very practically about that is important. You know, will this person be able to do what I want them to do or need them to do? And again, that practical, we, you know, being in this area, we have lots and lots of clients who have family all over the world. And they're very close to some of those family members. And their instinct is, well, you know, my sister or my brother or my cousin or my aunt, they're the right person to do this. But sometimes it turns out they don't speak a lot of English. They don't have the ability to get here. They don't have the ability to navigate these things. That doesn't mean that they're not capable people, but it means practically what are the barriers in the way of them getting things done for a power of attorney or a healthcare directive, and sort of looking very practically at those barriers. I think that's the thing that we do, I think, well with clients is really look at what's going to happen so that things that, you know, we don't get caught up in sort of the what's nice or what feels good, because if that conflicts with what will actually happen, then it's not going to feel good at the time. And so, you know, also think about the family around. I've had clients in your father's situation who have said, hey, I know that I want to be gone immediately. I know my wife and kids won't be able to handle that. So let's say we're going to wait a week. Let's give them the time. Let's build that in ahead of time, because I know who they are and how they'll react.
Okay. Andrew just smiled and says, it's time to take another break. So we'll finish up on the healthcare directives and then we'll go into revocable trusts. But right now, the commercial, if you will, is for NITP.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to the final section of today's seminar. Mark Levine, attorney at law, and we've been talking about powers of attorney, healthcare directives, probably got a little bit more to talk about, and then we'll go into revocable trusts, and we'll have a terrific hour behind us.
So the other couple other things about healthcare directives is just that access to information. Healthcare directives are often set up, again, the same way as powers of attorney, to sort of activate when someone's incapacitated. I think for information, we really want to look at making sure information is available to your family earlier than that, earlier than your incapacity. So, for example, when I did healthcare directives for my, you know, teenage daughters, when they turned 18, the information part of that was immediate. I can get information whenever I want, although decision making about their healthcare is still based on, you know, they always get to go first. They get to decide what they want first, but if they can't, then my wife and I can. So I think that even, you know, with the powers of attorney and the healthcare directives, looking at when do they have access to information and making that perhaps earlier than even when they make decisions sometimes makes sense. But think about that for yourself, your spouse, your adult children, your parents, anyone where you have to make decisions. Getting these documents in place as early as possible is going to make life much, much easier. And I can say this with complete confidence. Every single person listening to us needs to have a power of attorney and a healthcare directive. You need them from the day you turn 18 to the day you die. They are just lifetime documents. They end at death. But every single person needs them in every situation. And I can feel pretty good about saying that.
Mark, we just got a great question emailed in. Here we go. My wife and I are in our 60s. Should we skip our three undeserving children and leave everything to our four grandkids?
Well, hopefully that's not my mom calling. No. Should we... So not really the topic in terms of who we leave stuff to. You know, if you think your kids are undeserving, then creating a trust for your grandkids is fine. I think that, again, practically, if you skip your kids and leave it to the grandkids, who's in charge of that money? You know, one of the very practical things to think about when you think about creating a trust is who's the trustee. And that trips up a lot of clients. They say, well, I want a trust for our kids. Great. Who's the trustee going to be? Well, we'll just make it our kids. Well, that's not going to work on any sort of real practical level. If they're in charge of the money themselves, it doesn't accomplish anywhere near what you're trying to accomplish. Same thing with these kids, right? The grandkids, if you're going to leave money to the grandkids, who's going to be in charge of it? Who's going to decide how it's used? Who's going to interact with your undeserving children to decide when and how it's used for their kids? So again, just sort of focusing on the practical. How does this work in real life if you do that? I think is something to think about. But we've done that. We certainly have disinherited children for clients where that's appropriate. But should you? That's not really a question I can answer. Anyone can answer other than you and your spouse.
Okay, moving forward then.
I think the last thing that we listed here was revocable trusts. And you know, you'll notice I said before, I can say with great confidence that everyone here, everyone listening, everyone who ever listens to this needs a power of attorney and a healthcare directive. The revocable trust is a little different. It's a tool. It's a good tool. We do lots of them. But they are, I think, somewhat oversold. They're sold as sort of the answer to all issues and all problems and all situations. That's not true. But one of the places that we do use them is with incapacity planning. A revocable trust is a entity that you create yourself. You're the grantor, the person who creates it while you're alive. You're the trustee, the person in charge of it while you're alive. And you're the beneficiary, the person who benefits from it while you're alive. And the question is then, if you become incapacitated, if you can't do things for yourself, who is it that steps in that trustee role to do that? And so when you've got a bunch of different kinds of assets, when you have difficult to deal with or assets in different jurisdictions, creating the trust allows you to put them all into an entity ahead of time. You're controlling it while you're competent, but if you become incompetent, the person who you named usually as your power of attorney, you've also named as the successor trustee while you're alive, but incapacitated. And so dealing with that allows you to name someone to deal with things if you're alive, but incapacitated. So there are usually things you could deal with a power of attorney, but the trust is going to be a little easier. The trust has everything already in one entity, almost like its own business. It's going to have a simplified way for you to step in and take over a bunch of stuff all at once. You don't usually have to keep giving the power of attorney to people. It also sets out the powers of who's in charge and where and why. Who is in charge if you can't? So if you've named your oldest daughter Mary as the trustee and the power of attorney, and she can't do it, the trust, the power of attorney have a backup. Who can, who does it if Mary can't? And, you know, when is it that they take over and how? And the trust just gives you a lot of flexibility with that. Powers of attorney are constrained much more by statute. They're constrained by what banks and financial institutions will and won't do. Trusts are much more complete in that regard. So having that to take care of someone is often a great tool. And again, like with anything else, we're looking at the practical. When they have to use it, how easy will it for them to, how easy will it be for them to use? Sort of a natural progression as people go along is, you know, spouses are both trustees. And then perhaps one spouse is gone or no longer competent, and there's one spouse who's the trustee. And then as that spouse becomes older, they may stop being the trustee entirely, or they may start being a co-trustee with one of the kids. And that's just sort of a progression that ideally we want to build into the document, rather than having to amend it, rather than having to change it, rather than relying on mom being competent to make a change later. How do we build into the document ways for those choices to be made, or that order to be taken? And then also thinking about, how are the kids going to interact with each other? How are they going to get information? Do we have that transparency? Do we have those checks and balances? Same as we have in the powers of attorney. If they're co-trustees, how do they work together? Do they delegate to each other? Do they have to agree on everything? You know, you really can think about the practical way these things are going to work for your family if you're not there to direct them.
So, Mark, terrific bullet points, terrific discussion. But now, how do I call Mark? I'm listening to the show, and I need to call Mark.
Well, you can call us. Our the firm number is 301-961-6464. My extension is 3313, so it's 301-961-6464, extension 3313. And my email, Mark, M-A-R-C, at handlerlevine.com, H-A-N-D-L-E-R-L-E-V-I-N-E.com. And the website, www.handlerlevine.com, H-A-N-D-L-E-R-L-E-V-I-N-E.com.
Wow. Several choices, all of which are great.
So I think, you know, the morbid improbabilities really comes down to a mindset. I think when people are coming in to think about their estate planning, how are those things going to work? How can things go wrong? So we talked mostly about the powers of attorney. There's a bunch of powers in there, a bunch of things, specifics to think about, the healthcare directive, the revocable trust. There's some other sort of very practical things to think about, where things go wrong because people haven't thought them through, beneficiary designations. For a lot of people, a lot of the value of what they have is going to pass by beneficiary designation. A lot of people assume that whoever they name as their beneficiary is also going to in some way or somehow have power over those assets while they're alive. So for example, the answer that a lot of clients give when I say, well, who's going to be able to deal with your TSP is, well, my kids are the beneficiaries. And I have to explain that that's not the same thing. Different benefits can sometimes have their own powers of attorney, and TSP chief among them. TSP has their own form power of attorney. Now, according to the TSP documentation, you can take the language from their TSP power of attorney and put it into your own power of attorney. So we do that with clients. Every time we have a client with a TSP, we make sure that our power of attorney has all of the TSP power of attorney information. But we also do the TSP form because I don't trust them to actually follow through on what they say and let us use our own form. So for the TSP, for example, you really need to have your own form power of attorney. The other thing you have to be aware of is that a lot of government agencies don't care about your power of attorney. They don't care about your revocable trust. They don't care about a court guardianship naming you as mom or dad's guardian. What they do is they determine their own representative payee, Social Security, the VA, OPM, don't really care about your power of attorney. So What you've got to do is design your other power of attorney, your trust, all of your things in a way so that that's who they will deal with. What do I mean by that? The Social Security Administration, what they're looking for when they name their, what they call representative payee, is the person who's actually taking care of mom. So if you've named your son who lives in San Francisco as your agent, and really it's your daughter who lives across the street who's doing everything, they may decide they want to name your daughter as the representative payee, not your son. So if you want all of this to be together, one of the things we want to do is make sure that the person we're naming is the person who's going to do stuff, because they're the person who's actually paying your bills and buying your groceries and paying your rent or your mortgage. That's the person that the VA or Social Security or OPM wants to deal with. And so when we're designing the power of attorney, we want to think about that as well, because there's nothing you can do in the power of attorney, nothing you can do in the trust, nothing you can do through a court guardianship that will require Social Security or VA to do anything. They're going to decide for themselves who they want to put in charge. So even beyond these things that we've listed here, there are other things to think about making sure your plan's going to work. And again, these are some of the improbabilities that people don't think about. They assume that my kid will be able to do all of this, or the person I name will be able to do all of this.
All right. And in the final analysis, when the folks walk out of your office, what do you want them to remember?
What do I want them to remember? Well, first of all, I can't wait till the day people walk out of my office on a regular basis, because that means people are walking into my office on a regular basis. You know, right now we still do will signings in person, which are complicated and quick and very impersonal. I think that really what we want people to walk away from the entire process with is the idea that it's more than just this or this or this, that we've thought about, you know, if not your son, then who? You know, how are they going to actually access this? And for them to think about, okay, we've thought through all these things. We've given out the information that we have to give out. So either they've given information to me as the attorney that I can pass on to the power of attorney or the healthcare agent or the trustee, or ideally they've given that information to the person, to the fiduciary person that they've named to do those things. And then once you've got the documents in place, ideally you're talking to these people about it, especially for the healthcare directive. It's really vital that when you leave, that's not the end of your healthcare discussion with your kids. Knowing what you want is sort of really important, not just sort of generally, but making sure everyone's on the same page with it, that all your kids know what you want. The places where these things become problems are the places where you've already got a problem among your kids, or one develops because you've told one thing to one or something else to another. Same thing with sort of, you know, it's not unusual as part of this process for a client to say to me, oh, I loaned my son $100,000 to help him buy his house. Okay. You know, does your daughter know that? No. You know, does anyone else know that? No. I said, well, you know, they're going to find out. And how do you feel about that? And how do you want to deal with it, if at all? Sometimes it'll be, you know, they will want to give them more money up front. They'll want to even that out or equalize it. But even more important is to have that conversation. You know, the worst thing that can happen, and I've seen it happen, is the family's close, dad dies, and now they discover, you know, how much he favored one or the other. And that starts to bring a bitterness about, or they discover that one of them is what I'll call a perpetrator of the parasitic sibling syndrome. the one sibling who always seems to find a way to get money from mom and dad, no matter what. And if sometimes it's not a secret, you know, I have lots of clients who will say, oh no, my brother, you know, will end up with the money no matter what. But if it's a secret, that's when it comes out. Again, it's going to create a lot of hard feelings. I'm less concerned about that sometimes, you know, because my client's dead at that point, but I'm very concerned about it if it's going to come out while one of them's trying to take care of the other. You want the competent kid who you've given no money to be in charge, And by the way, keep giving money to this other kid who he had no idea you were giving money to. There are things like that that come up not infrequently that you need to sort of think about, how do you wash all that out again so things are going to work. That's our main mantra, making sure things work.
Okay, Andrew is giving us the peace sign, which means we have 2 minutes left.
Okay. Well, I would say, again, to finish up, do this stuff. We have seen in the last year that the improbable has happened more often than any of us would like. It happens in many different ways and places, and it affects all of us. And so dealing with things proactively rather than assuming they're all going to work out, I think is the key takeaway from this. Yes, things often work out. Yes, they often work out the way you think they're going to, but we don't know that's going to be you. You may be the one where it's all of the morbid improbabilities that come out rather than the probable, rather than what you think is going to happen.
Okay. Andrew says, now we got 1 minute left. So if you were to tell people in advance what to bring to the first meeting, I believe from prior show, you kind of like an outline. This is what I would like to see.
Well, we have a questionnaire, and I think as much of that, I would say a lot of clients look at that and they go, well, that's an awful lot. And when they finish it, they go, well, I'm really glad I did that because I hadn't really thought about organizing it or what I had. And leaving a place, talk about the sort of, planning or helping, that questionnaire is immensely helpful for your kids. We ask about your miles and your storage unit, not because we're going to include that in your estate plan, but because when your kids come to take care of stuff, I can say, did you look at the storage unit? Did you know they had a storage unit? Did you look at the miles? Did you look at these things? And having all that information, as much information as possible, is going to be the best way to go forward.
Okay. Well, Andrew says it's time to say adieu. Thanks, Mark. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Andrew, for keeping us on track. And thank more so for the listeners. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.